You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk about how the state handles special elections for vacant legislative and congressional seats and why that process has been controversial in a recent political fight. First, what did you do yesterday? How about a week ago today, a year ago? There's a good chance you don't remember. But what if you'd been taking notes each day, every day? You might learn an awful lot about yourself. There are people all over the world who track their every move. They're known as self-trackers, and our next guest is one of them. He's been taking notes about his everyday activity for years, now just 3 months shy of his 10-year goal. What has he discovered about himself, and what changes might he make to live a better life? Morris Villarroel is a professor of animal physiology at the Technical University of Madrid and the author of Self-Trackers, 8 Personal Tales of Journeys in Life Logging. Morris, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, lovely to be with you.
What led you to set out on this project of tracking basically everything you did?
Well, it started about 10 years ago when shortly after my 40th birthday, and I was kind of looking back, you know, one of these birthdays that are important in your life, and looking back and saying, well, what happened in these 40 years and what's going to happen in the next 40 years? And then I started thinking, well, I should maybe track my time a bit better because I didn't have that much to show for the previous 40 years. I mean, I'd done a lot and had a family, children, et cetera, but I didn't really have that much data. And since I work in science, I thought I needed maybe a bit more quantification of what I was doing.
What is the method you decided to use to track your life?
Well, really, it started off, it is not a method per se, but I just started off saying, well, I'm going to get like a nice notebook and I'm going to start logging or writing down the things I do. Previously, I had written down maybe diaries, like, you know, kind of a summary of what I was doing during the day. And now I was thinking I could use a different method similar to what I used to study animals. Is I've studied animal behavior, is to write down like just a timeline of the day and different events and the duration of those events during the day. So it's kind of like a logbook. And just to continue, I started to do it and I said, well, maybe I can last a month or a year. And I just kept on doing it. Now it's been almost 10 years.
And how many notebooks is that in that time?
As we're speaking, I'm writing in a notebook, 310.
Wow. Okay. Now, you've observed animals with a similar method, and presumably we can learn a lot about animal behavior by checking in with them over time. Have you started to learn things about you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's been a lot of things I've been learning over the years. After about a year and a half of doing this, I ran into a group, or I heard about a group, and then I started collaborating with them. It's a movement called Quantified Self. So this was back in 2011, 2012. And then I started a blog, and then I started noticing, well, there are different things that I could track, or I could notice different things that made me happier or more upset or frustrated. So it's hard to summarize it all in one sentence, but there are a lot of different aspects of life that if you start getting more data about, you think about it more in detail, and then you can say, well, I'd like to improve this or forget about this or change this.
Can you talk about one improvement you've made based on taking these notes and going back over them?
Yeah, I think I can give you maybe a more simple one, which is I used to have more back problems, and then I started noticing if I was walking more, I'd have less or you know, getting up. And so I decided to walk to work instead of taking the car. It's about a 15-minute drive and walking. It takes me a bit in the metro, a bit walking outside. It takes me about 45 minutes. So that was a change, and it actually improved my life substantially because I was spending more time outdoors, I was walking, and I didn't have any more back pain. So that's like a health thing. And I think more in a psychological way, there's another aspect there that I think is interesting is what people call metacognition. So it's like thinking about thinking, no? So this kind of logging process helps you to think more about how you think and what things you're doing. So you can see how that varies some days. Some days are a bit more stressful, like maybe Monday or Tuesday. Some months are a bit more stressful. So you can kind of get a bit of hold on saying, well, should I make this decision now because I'm in a situation where maybe I won't be able to make the best decision? Maybe I should hold off and wait a couple hours or days. So I think you get to know yourself a bit better. You kind of get more feedback from yourself, you know, by looking at the notebooks from previous days or weeks.
What about negative stuff? Are there things you learned by doing this that you're like, Morris, why do you do that? Things you decided you might not have thought about, but you didn't like about yourself along the way?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, typical situations where maybe, as I was kind of mentioning, you're stressed and then you're saying, okay, well, I could do this. I know maybe this isn't the best thing I should do right now, but I'm going to continue defending this point in this discussion, or I'm going to continue doing something. And you can, you notice things like, well, maybe I should back off a bit, or maybe I should consider the other person's opinion a bit more in this debate, because in the midterm to long term, you're going to have to get along with this person, whatever, in your department or in a couple or whatever. So you don't necessarily, you tend to avoid maybe a direct conflict and then see it in a longer kind of long-term basis. And I think in that sense, things have changed. Like maybe in the past, like if I go back 8 or 9 years, I had more, maybe, how do you say, specific points during the week where I could have probably backed off, but I didn't. And then now I could just see it more like a long-term process and say, okay, well, just you can relax on this. You don't have to make a decision right away or do this. So you can see it in a more long-term light.
We're talking to Morris Villarroel, professor of animal physiology at the Technical University of Madrid. He has been tracking his life with notebooks, as much detail as he can, for almost 10 years. Morris, I got to say, reading about your project, I thought, you know, what if I did this for myself? And my fear would be that in writing it and going back and reading it later, it would be really boring and kind of tedious, which is maybe a lesson in and of itself. Did you find that for yourself at all?
No, I didn't. I think also there are some people who come to me and say, well, I think if I did this for myself, I wouldn't really necessarily feel that good. You know, it doesn't really make me feel that good to look back and see myself in a previous light. Actually, there are conferences and things you go to about this stuff. And I think there's kind of a range of people who look at their diaries from when they're 16 and they're like, oh, that poor guy, you know, if only I could have told him this or that. And then other people are like, oh, I'd really like to look at this diary when I was 16 and just see what I was up to and look at it more maybe in a positive light. So I think it depends a bit on your personality. Like I don't think this is necessarily for everybody to do like every day, but for me at least, looking back, I don't find it boring. And I find it every day. You think, oh, this is what I did on Monday, and then you look back and you say, well, wait a second, I also did this and this and 18 other things. So no wonder I was tired, you know, when I got home. So it helps you put things into context and maybe even control yourself a bit better. And then out of those events or just things that happens, that say, well, maybe next Monday I'll spend a bit more time doing this and less time looking at my phone or answering phone calls, things that maybe interest me more or in the long term are going to maybe be, you know, motivate myself more, be better for me.
I understand at one point you tried augmenting this with something that took pictures of you at regular intervals. How did that help or hinder your efforts?
Yeah, that was, they're called life logging cameras. This was a company called Narrative that made these cameras. So it's really small, like a couple inches square. And you just clip it on your shirt or your sweater, your jacket, whatever. And you can time it to take pictures every 10 seconds or 30 seconds or a minute. And you just put it on. It doesn't really take pictures of me, but it takes pictures of what's directly ahead of me, kind of like a body cam that a police might wear, but it doesn't take video, just takes still pictures. So I did that. Actually, I did that for about 3.5 years. And so every day during those 3.5 years, I have pictures every 30 seconds. I thought it was going to maybe help me with my journaling or my logging, because there was a lot of stuff that I don't write down. I found out, you know, like you meet somebody in the hallway and chat for 5 minutes. Well, I don't necessarily write that in my logbook, or sometimes I forget. And then, but with the camera, you can see that. So it does pick out different kind of a granularity of what's happening during the day. And it does underline, I think, all those, again, I was saying before, all those actions, all those things that are happening in your life. and that your brain works hard to kind of forget about. So, so that could be looking at it. Some things maybe are worth remembering. Some things aren't. But I don't know. Simple things like when you're at work and you meet somebody in the hallway. I think depending on how they treat you or what they're saying to you or how that very short event worked out, it does affect, in a way, the rest of your day or maybe your next event because, you know, if it was a pleasant, nice reaction, it affects you a little bit. If it was somebody you were trying to avoid or whatever, it does have some negative effects. So it does kind of put things into context later when you say, well, I had a bad day or a good day. These things add up, you know.
Morris, as we wrap up, do you plan to keep doing this well into the future?
I think so. I was planning back in 2010. I was thinking I could do this maybe a maximum 10 years. I've met other people who are doing things for even longer. So there's kind of a community there, and we kind of support each other. And I think so. I think I'm going to be 50 in February. And I plan to continue doing it because it seems to be, well, it's helpful for me. Something I like to do. And the family and the friends don't complain too much about it. So I think I'll continue for now.
Morris, thanks so much for joining us today.
Okay, thank you very much.
Morris Villarroel is a professor of animal physiology at the Technical University of Madrid and the author of Self-Trackers, 8 Personal Tales of Journeys in Life Logging. We talked with him about his quest to record and document every moment of his life over the past 10 years and beyond. Coming up, we'll look at new reporting from WisContext that takes a deep dive into the political fight over when to hold the special election in Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District, the seat recently vacated by former U.S. Representative Sean Duffy. That's up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Democrats and the White House have reached a deal on a new North American trade deal. We'll talk about the details and politics of the USMCA in just a bit. First, former U.S. Representative Sean Duffy left Congress in September, and that set off a political fight over when voters would get a chance to replace him. Governor Evers announced an initial special election date that was criticized by Republicans and Democrats. But now that the special election day has been set for May 12th, new reporting from WisContext shows that the opening for the 7th Congressional District seat will be the longest vacancy in Wisconsin's modern political history. WPR host Keely Baltina spoke with WisContext reporter Haley Sperling about the story.
Let's start with this discussion about filling the 7th Congressional seat that wound up being really political. What happened?
So Sean Duffy represented the United States Congressional District 7, which is northern Wisconsin, and he announced his resignation in August and officially resigned in September. And so what should have been and what normally is sort of a run-of-the-mill process when it comes to special elections became quite entangled in many different laws and reasons. So Governor Evers initially set a primary and election date in December and January, respectively. But that didn't work out for quite a few reasons. He received a lot of initial backlash from both Democrats and Republicans who questioned the date for reasons of partisanship and the fact that the December primary date was the last night of Hanukkah, so having elections around holidays never works out. Low voter turnout was a big question. So he was stuck with a really tough decision when it came to setting this date. And then on top of that, following the various state rules and federal rules and regulations.
And then it wasn't just easy enough to set a new date. We got entangled in this confusion between federal statutes and state law. Break that down for us.
Right. So in the past, like I said, setting special election dates isn't really that big of a deal. But because Representative Duffy is a federal congressman, Evers had to take into account both state laws and federal laws. And so the biggest federal law standing in the way of Evers quickly setting a date and just moving on with the process is known as the MOVE Act. And so this was passed in 2009. And essentially what it does is it sets a period of time that persons living overseas and military personnel have to have for receiving and sending in their absentee ballots. And so this went into effect, like I said, in 2009. And since then, Wisconsin has not had a federal special election. So this problem hasn't come up in the past. But it turns out that Wisconsin special election laws don't actually line up with the MOVE Act. So the Evers administration was really stuck between, you know, a rock and a hard place when it came to setting a new date. So they actually really had to dig into legislation and figure out what they could do to make things work in this special situation.
And what did they figure out? When will the election happen?
So the election is happening on May 12th of 2020 with a primary on February 18th, which aligns with the state's spring primaries as well. And so this date is actually pretty far out in setting. Yeah.
The congressman announced his resignation in August, and it won't be until the next May that voters will weigh in.
Exactly. And so in setting the first date, the January and December primary and election dates, you know, Evers said that he wanted to expedite this process and make sure the people of the 7th district get the adequate representation that they deserve. But again, because laws restricted that, he had to move the date pretty far out. And so there's a lot that goes into planning and establishing a special election. You know, it's not just saying, OK, we're going to have an election on this date. But, you know, you need to give candidates time to collect signatures, to run their campaigns, to actually go, you know, knocking on doors and getting people excited to vote. And again, the laws are at play. So it really came down to scheduling a time that was good for the rest of the state and that could actually work within the bounds of the law.
And your reporting also details not only why it's important for candidates, but why it's important for election staff to make sure that the timing is right with special elections and all of the other things that they have to have happen throughout the year.
Right, because there are a lot of, you know, extended costs that go into special elections. And again, you know, like I said, campaigns have to be run and it takes a team of people to do that. And teams have to be hired and they have to be trained and have to be informed. So it's a much bigger process than just getting names on a ballot and getting people to vote. It's the democratic process, which is multifaceted.
Certainly. Haley Sperling is an engagement editor and reporter with WisContext. And we are talking about her latest report that discusses the differences and the nuances of Governor Tony Evers scheduling a special election for an open congressional seat. Part of the reason Evers argues that it should have been a quick turnaround for a special election is that Congress is moving forward with important things. We're talking about impeachment. We're talking about the USMCA, the deal mm-hmm. that replaces NAFTA. I mean, what's at stake for representation there?
So representation is, of course, very crucial for every American to have. You want your voice to be heard in Congress. You want to be represented by people that you trust. When it comes to bigger deals like impeachment and like rehauling NAFTA, the House of Representatives is pretty solidly split among their party lines in terms of voting. So, you know, having one voice missing from the Republican Party in the House of Representatives isn't necessarily going to sway any major votes like on impeachment or on NAFTA, because, again, votes are set down party lines, and the Democrats have a really solid majority in the House of Representatives. But where representation really does come into play, as one of my sources explained to me, is the smaller and more day-to-day issues that constituents actually face. So Representative Duffy was very keen on the matter of rural broadband services, because that's what his constituents are talking about and that's what's important to them. So having a lack of voice there could slow things down for people in that aspect. So it does definitely affect people, and it can affect everyday lives. But when it comes to the bigger picture matter, having this seat vacant for so long isn't going to swing any major votes.
We may not have had a special election at the congressional level, but we have had special elections relatively routinely at the state level. This did come up under Governor Scott Walker when he was in office. What's the difference there in how he approached this situation?
Yeah. So In 2017, Scott Walker, then governor, appointed two Republican legislators to his cabinet, and then ensued a whole lot. Essentially, Governor Walker said that he didn't want to call a special election and that he didn't have to because within state law, the date of the resignation was before the date that an upcoming election would occur. So the resignations occur in 2017 and the next election was happening in 2018. So in accordance with state law, he said he didn't necessarily have to call the election. This was called into question by residents of the districts of the representatives and eventually went to court and went through a lot of hoops and circles. Walker did eventually have to call a special election, though with what he wanted, it would have been much longer even than this gap of time between Representative Duffy's resignation and his impending special election. So if Walker had originally gotten what he wanted with this special election case, there would have been a total of 312 days between the time of the election and between the time of the resignations, rather, and the time of the special election. In the case of Representative Duffy, with the election now on May 12th, there will be a total of 232 days between the time of his resignation and the time of the election.
So Governor Scott Walker says, we can wait. We'll just wait till the next election. The courts say, no, you have to do it sooner. Evers says, let's do it sooner. And it turns out federal law requires us to do it later.
Right, exactly. So they kind of both got what the other one wanted. And it's just the way it worked out, you know, the circumstances for each were both very different, but they ended up causing a whole bunch of stir in terms of these special election processes, which is something that before 2017 really didn't happen that much.
Fascinating. Haley, thank you for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
As WPR host Keely Baltina talking to WisContext reporter Haley Sperling, they were talking about a new piece from WisContext taking a closer look at how special elections work in Wisconsin and why there's been controversy over them lately. Coming up after the news, House Democrats announced articles of impeachment against President Trump yesterday and struck a deal on a new trade agreement. We'll talk about both during our look at the week in Washington. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. It's been another busy week in national politics, and it's only Wednesday. President Trump is slamming the FBI and its director over a new report on the 2016 Russia investigation. The House Judiciary Committee is finalizing its articles of impeachment, and Democrats have reached a deal with the White House on the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, the trade deal meant to replace NAFTA. We want to hear your thoughts on that trade agreement with our neighbors to the north and south. Does this come as good news to you or maybe your line of work? Do you want Congress to pass this new deal? Do you have concerns about it? What do you make of the timing of Democrats announcing the deal on the same day they unveiled articles of impeachment? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Jennifer Habercorn is a staff writer covering Congress for Los Angeles Times, also a graduate of Marquette University. She joins us from the U.S. Capitol building. Jen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me, and thanks for the shout out to my alma mater.
Always. Well, let's start with the impeachment articles released yesterday by House Democrats, one over abuse of power, the other for obstructing Congress. What struck you about the focus of those articles, what's in them and what's not?
Yeah, well, there was a big debate among Democrats as to how broad of a case to make against the president. I mean, at some point, there were Democrats, saying that there should be a whole list of articles of impeachment, particularly looking at obstruction of justice related to the president's activities outlined in the Mueller report. That was the special counsel's investigation into Russia. There were Democrats who wanted to hold him accountable for his actions trying to fire the special counsel, among some other things. But what they really decided on is a pretty narrow approach. I mean, they would argue that the abuse of power charge is a pretty broad charge, but it's just one of two articles of impeachment. And the strategy there was to keep it pretty focused and contained because there's, you know, several opinions across the Democratic caucus, but it's moderate Democrats, those in districts where Trump is pretty popular or even just a little bit popular, and they're worried about the political backlash some of those members would face if it looked like they were just throwing this kitchen sink at the president.
I want to give a listen to Judiciary Committee Chair Jerry Nadler announcing those articles yesterday.
Elections are the cornerstone of democracy and are foundational to the rule of law. But the integrity of our next election is at risk from a president who has already sought foreign interference in the 2016 and 2020 elections and who consistently puts himself above country. That is why we must act now.
And that seemed focused on the criticism that that Democrats are moving too fast, should take time to go through the courts to bring more witnesses in. This is something that Democrats have been trying to address, right?
That's right. There's been some criticism that they've been moving too fast. In fact, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi responded to that by saying that this has been happening for 2.5 years, which frankly is a Republican talking point that Democrats have just been trying to impeach the president since he first came into office. So it's kind of a nebulous argument. The real meat of it, though, is that there is a debate as to whether Democrats should wait for the courts to sort out whether some of the folks involved, particularly former National Security Advisor John Bolton, should have to testify. And that's important because Bolton and others, just like Rudy Giuliani, has also refused subpoenas. They have a lot of information that could sway lawmakers in either direction. And so far, they have refused to cooperate and hold some answers to pivotal questions.
Now, this evening, the House Judiciary Committee will meet to start marking up the articles of impeachment. That's supposed to continue tomorrow morning. What's involved in a committee markup?
Yeah, this is a process that any bill goes through. Members essentially debate. They can debate any word in the piece of legislation. And so that's what's going to happen here. These are usually on high-profile pieces of legislation, including impeachment. They're pretty contentious. We're going to see Democrats, Republicans argue the case on impeachment, argue which articles are in there and which ones aren't. But Democrats seem pretty aligned that they're not going to try to add anything in there. The question now is whether Republicans try to pick apart the articles of impeachment. At the end of the day, though, it's pretty much a fait accompli. Democrats have more members on the committee than Republicans, so they can vote down anything Republicans do. And by tomorrow evening sometime, we expect the articles to be through the committee, and then the next step would be the House floor.
Right. For Republicans, it seems like the edit they would want on these is delete all. That's simply
right.
They don't think this should exist in the first place.
Yeah, and they're kind of arguing that you can't improve upon articles of impeachment that are so horrible to begin with. So the debate is going to be pretty political. It's not going to be pretty substantive.
We'll watch that. And by the way, we'll start airing those markup hearings this evening at 6 here on the Ideas Network and pick it up tomorrow morning. Right now, it's our weekly look at the top stories in national politics. Jennifer Habercorn with us from the Los Angeles Times. Well, let's transition toward this trade agreement, the USMCA agreement replacing NAFTA. Callers, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think NAFTA should have been gotten rid of? Do you like the idea of a tweak? Did it need bigger changes? Should Democrats be working with the president on this? Call 800-642-1234. Jen, you wrote a piece about this kind of odd thing where Democrats arrive at a deal with the president on the same day and talk about it basically within the same hour as releasing these articles of impeachment.
Yeah, it was, you know, I've been up here covering Congress for several years now, and it was really one of the most remarkable mornings that I've seen. I mean, at 9 a.m., Speaker Pelosi and several of her chairmen who've been involved in this process announced that the articles of impeachment would move forward. At 10 o'clock, Speaker Pelosi came back with one of her chairmen and said, we're signing the president's trade deal. So it was really, you know, a dramatic whiplash. But at the same time, Congress works under deadline. We have the holidays coming up. They want to get their plate cleared before they go home. So it's a natural time to for things to wrap up. But also politically, this is really significant, again, for those moderate Democrats who are going to have to go and run for re-election next year in parts of the country where Trump is popular. They want to be able to send the message that, yes, they think the president did things that warrant impeachment, but on certain areas where they agree on policy, they can work together. And so they said it was not intentional that these things happened the same day, but it did fit very conveniently well into their messaging that they can, quote unquote, walk and chew gum.
And some Republican messaging, in any case, has been, hey, while Democrats are busy with this impeachment deal, they're ignoring important things like the USMCA. So get it done. So was this partly an effort by Democrats to say, hold on, yeah, we can do both, as you're saying, the walk and chew gum?
Absolutely, yeah. It's all about walk and chew gum. Frankly, you hear that out of every other person's mouth that you talk to up here lately. But yeah, that was really important to them. And, you know, Republicans chided them for that. In fact, they said that they have held up USMCA, or Democrats have held up USMCA in order to have these events happen on the same day.
And now it goes to the Senate, and Senate leadership, Republican leadership there says, later in January, it sounds like.
That's right. It does still need to pass the House. That vote is on the USMCA is expected next week, but at this point it does seem like it's very likely going to pass. But yes, then it would go to the Senate, and Senate leaders have said that they would deal with it after an impeachment trial, assuming that also lands in the Senate. And that is unlikely to wrap up until late January or February.
Talking with Jennifer Habercorn, congressional reporter for the LA Times, looking at some of the week's top stories in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, the politics surrounding it, which we've been talking about, and the policy. We'll touch on that in just a bit. Have you been following this? This is the deal that, in effect, replaces NAFTA, updates it. It's been anywhere from President Trump saying the U.S. should just withdraw completely to long negotiations. Now in Congress, what were you hoping to see come out of this? Do you think Democrats should or should not have decided to work with the president to arrive at a final deal and a vote on this U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Jennifer Habercorn of the LA Times, looking at this week's news out of Washington. Jen, we were talking about the politics of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. Let's talk a little bit about the policy side. This is an update to NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Not a huge drastic change, though, as it was originally negotiated. Is that right?
That's right. Democrats put up quite a bit of an effort to get the deal changed. One of their main concerns was making sure that there was enforcement of labor provisions in Mexico. They argue that if Mexican workers are not held to the same standards of U.S. workers, it really wouldn't have much effect. And so that was a big area that changed in the year after the president signed the agreement, and now, and it presumably is going to pass Congress. That's one of the main things. Democrats were also looking to make some other changes. Not all of them were able to get through, such as the inclusion of language to address climate change.
Ultimately, President Trump will say, if this passes the House and then the Senate, President Trump can say, hey, look, I successfully negotiated this deal and brought it through Congress. Democrats could say we successfully negotiated some changes in what the president negotiated. So everybody comes away with a little something.
That's the effort in this and most pieces of legislation that pass Congress.
Well, let's move on to some other non-impeachment news, Jen. House Democrats planning to vote on a drug pricing bill. It's another idea that's been in the works for a while. What kind of things is this bill looking to do when it comes to the cost of prescription medications?
Yeah, this is a pretty expansive drug bill. You'll remember a lot of the 2018 election, Democrats were making the case on health care and the high cost of prescription drugs. And now this is their legislation to really address that problem. One of the main things it does is it allows the federal government to negotiate drug prices with Medicare. It sounds wonky, but it's a pretty big deal because it would force drug makers essentially to lower their prices. And the price that drugs are sold in Medicare really affects the price that people pay if they have private insurance coverage. It kind of just puts downward pressure. That's a pretty controversial idea. Republicans don't like it because it sounds like price fixing. So this is going to be probably a Democrats only bill, but Democrats feel like it's really important to set the standard and kind of set the message for what they would do if they controlled everything in Washington. And so this is going to be a pretty big vote, but won't become law anytime soon. And in fact, there was kind of some debate among Democrats themselves as to how this, what this bill should look like. Progressives were really pushing hard to move it further to the left. In fact, they threatened to block the bill unless it moved further to the left.
And I understand a couple of the leaders of kind of the progressive wing of the Democratic House caucus met with House leadership, including Mark Pocan from Wisconsin, and came out saying, okay, yeah, it looks like we can come to a deal on what we want to pass here.
That's right. The speaker agreed to make some changes to the bill, essentially to require that more drugs are negotiated through Medicare than what was previously in the bill. And because of that agreement, progressives led by Mark Pocan and others are not going to threaten to block the bill, which would have been a pretty big deal for internal politics.
But as you were saying, this is something that might well end up passing the House but not pass the Senate. And there's a pretty long list, right, of things that one house does and the other house, led by the opposite party, just lets sit there.
Yeah, and that's been the story this year, frankly. House Democrats have 10 bills that they really made part of their agenda, and so far all of them have gone through the House and not the Senate. In fact, there's dozens more that are lower profile, but yeah, that's what House Democrats are really talking a lot about now, is these bills that are languishing in the Senate. Senate Republicans don't really have any appetite to negotiate with House Democrats right now. The Senate's focusing on confirming conservative judges. So we're kind of at this legislative stalemate, which is one of the reasons why the USMCA deal, the trade deal that we talked about earlier, is such a big deal, because it's one of the few pieces of legislation that are actually getting through this divided government.
And again, this has been a talking point, and this goes back to what we were saying about the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. Republicans saying, hey, House Democrats, you aren't getting things done because you're impeaching. Democrats saying, oh, no, hold on, we've passed a lot of stuff. It's not getting done because it's falling apart in the Senate.
Exactly. And I think we're going to be hearing about this for another year in the run-up to the next election. In fact, Democrats are worried that they don't have enough to talk about, and they want some bipartisan deals. But right now, the appetite for bipartisanship and any kind of compromise is just not there. Democrats are passing very progressive bills. Republicans, in the Senate at least, are not passing many pieces of legislation at all. They're focusing on judges. So it's really hard to see where that they bridge that divide. I just don't see it.
Talking to Jennifer Habercorn, she covers Congress for the Los Angeles Times. We're looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Just getting back to impeachment for a moment, a reminder that the House Judiciary Committee will begin considering two articles of impeachment against President Trump in their markup session tonight. You can hear live coverage on WPR starting at 6. NPR's live coverage will be hosted by Rachel Martin with senior Washington editor Ron Elving, congressional correspondent Kelsey Snell. That's tonight at 6. And then if they keep going, you can pick up tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. Jen, moving on to another story. Now, we had this Justice Department Inspector General report yesterday finding that political bias wasn't behind the 2016 investigation of the Trump campaign, but there were omissions and errors by FBI agents at some key points during the probe. Now, President Trump has really slammed the FBI over this on Twitter and in a public appearance. What kind of back and forth have we seen since this report, I guess even before this report came out?
Yeah, it's been a really partisan process, and in fact, it's leaked into the impeachment investigation as well. Republicans feel like this is something that needs to be investigated more. President Trump is pushing them on that, we're kind of I feel like I keep saying stalemate, but that's where we are on a lot of things these days in terms of further investigation on this.
Now, is there any indication that FBI Director Christopher Wray's job might be in jeopardy? The president put out a tweet that for any other president, you'd say, okay, this is a sign that the president has lost confidence in this guy, but what are we looking for there?
Yeah, I mean, so far, if the president tweets about you, it's typically not a great sign. At least that's been the practice for many of his administration officials. I think we'd see a bit of a backlash, though, if he were to move forward.
And there's a lot of different kinds of spin and response being put on this Inspector General report. Are people even operating in the same reality as they read what was in this report?
Yeah, we're definitely, it's a Rorschach test of sorts. I mean, Republicans read it one way, Democrats read it another way, and it's gone completely through partisan filters. I mean, this situation is one in which there seems to be no nuance, and people, each party is viewing it from their party camps, and it's hard to see how that's going to break through. But I do expect Republicans are going to be talking more and more about this, particularly as impeachment heads closer to the Senate, because in the Senate, Republicans are in control, so they can decide what kind of hearings are called. That's why there was the hearing this week, and we could expect more.
Now, I want to look ahead, Jennifer, to what Congress has left in the works. A holiday coming up. Obviously, a lot of times things are winding down around now, but they've got some big stuff, including, isn't there still a spending bill that they have to sign off on? You know, that little thing?
Yeah. Yeah, that little thing like keeping the government's doors open. As of right now, the government is funded only through December 20th, 9 days from now. And so lawmakers are trying to ensure that there's not another holiday shutdown. As of now, a shutdown seems pretty unlikely. The last one was just so unpopular, and the government was partially closed for, I think it was about 40 days, and no lawmaker seems ready for that to happen. But, you know, there's going to be a very interesting dynamic next week if the president is impeached by the House one day, and the next day he's asked to sign a government spending bill that doesn't have his priorities in there, such as money for the border wall. That could create a pretty hostile dynamic, to say the least. And, the president is likely to decide whether the government remains open if lawmakers are able to come to an agreement on how exactly to do so.
Well, flip open the dates on the congressional advent calendar to get that spending bill signed off on. 9 days left. Is there a thought of when they're going to try to do that?
I mean, they're trying to do it now. Stephen Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, was on Capitol Hill yesterday meeting with Republican and Democrats in Nancy Pelosi's office, and they were discussing how to move forward. 9 days is not a lot of time, but when Congress does decide that they want to do something, they can do it relatively quickly. My antennas aren't up yet and too worried about a shutdown, but that will change if there isn't an agreement by early next week.
And then give us the timeline on the next steps, bringing us back to where we started on impeachment. What are the next key points, and when, at least tentatively, are they scheduled to happen?
Well, as you mentioned, there's the markup in the the House Judiciary Committee. That'll be tonight and tomorrow. From there, the articles of impeachment would go to the House floor. That'll happen next week. That'll be probably a pretty lengthy debate. We don't have an exact time as to when it'll start, but I would expect that to be Tuesday and Wednesday. And then there'll be a vote on the House floor. We don't know exactly when that is, but that's going to be a pretty high-profile vote, to say the least. And we're likely to have a vote on both articles of impeachment. So you could see a scenario in which each article has a different vote tally. As of right now, Democrats do seem like they're going to have the votes to be able to do it. The moderates, progressives, folks in the middle, they all seem pretty aligned. One big question I have is if there is a single Republican vote. It does not seem likely at this point, but that would obviously be a pretty significant marker. Democrats would love to be able to say that this was a bipartisan vote. And we're likely to see at least two Democrats vote against impeachment. Colin Peterson from Minnesota and Jeff Van Drew from New Jersey, they've already said that they're pretty unlikely to vote for it.
We'll leave it there for now and keep watching those stories. Jen, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've been talking to Jennifer Habercorn. She covers Congress at the Los Angeles Times. She joined us for our weekly look at the latest top stories in national politics. Reminder that one of those stories will pick up again today at 6 o'clock Central Time. The House Judiciary Committee will begin considering two articles of impeachment against President Trump in a markup session. And you can listen live here on the Ideas Network. Listen on the Ideas Network or WPR.org. And then tomorrow, pick up coverage of that committee session when it resumes. That's tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Again, follow that House Judiciary markup session for the articles of impeachment here on the Ideas Network. All right, here's the thing. I've been to a gym two times this week. For a lot of people, that would be nothing. For me, it's a great rarity. I'm trying to do the exercise thing. I'm not an exercise guy. Central Time producer Tim Peterson is, and I brought Tim in to give me some encouragement. Hey, Tim.
Hey there, Rob.
Now, I know I should exercise. It's like low-hanging fruit in my health life, but I find exercise really boring and unfun. Turn me around here in the next minute. Go.
Do you listen to any music while you exercise?
Sometimes.
Do you exercise around other people? Other people who are enjoying exercise?
Well, they seem to be at the gym. I don't know. I don't know what they're getting out of it that I'm not.
You just have to feed off their energy, Rob.
I don't always. Also, I mean, this is another thing. People say get out and exercise with other people. I don't always like doing things with other people.
How about the clothing? You wearing constrictive clothing or loose-fitting clothing?
I'd say pretty loose-fitting. Yeah, no, I'm pretty smart about that, I think.
Is there any kind of background diversion or distraction or thing that excites
like
you could
something
watch?
Something not boring. And there's the core. Is you're doing something so boring that it requires something not boring to balance it out. So one of the things I'm doing is swimming, and that's fun. And I know you actually teach other humans how to swim.
I do, yes.
All right. And I run out of steam swimming, but would you recommend that? Is that the fun thing that's going to finally capture
it can be
my
fun.
Exercise life?
Yes, it can be fun. The thing is to not worry too much about just going back and forth. Think about just continuing to go forward.
Go forward. Well, that's great advice for the new year, my New Year's pre-solution. Tim, thanks. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.